We're going to continue in Matthew 27, starting at verse 62. The next day, that is, after the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered before Pilate and said, "Sir, remember how that impostor said while he was still alive, 'After 3 days, I will rise.' Therefore, order the tomb to be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples go and steal him away and tell the people he has risen from the dead. And the last fraud will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard of soldiers. Go, make it as secure as you can." So they went and made the tomb secure by sealing the stone and setting a guard. Matthew, as with the other gospel writers, makes it very clear that Jesus did, in fact, die, that he was indeed laid in a tomb, and that tomb was Joseph of Arimathea's tomb. He was checked for signs of life on Pilate's orders. His burial was witnessed by Mary Magdalene, and it says the other Mary, quite possibly the Mary mentioned in John 19 as the wife of Clopas, whom Jesus will meet on the road to Emmaus in just a few days' time. All these connections that we see in the scriptures. To emphasize the extravagance of Joseph's generosity, Matthew tells us that the tomb is carved from rock near to the city, something only a very wealthy and influential person could afford. Times haven't changed, have they? How many of us can afford to buy a house right in the city? How many of us can afford to do those sorts of things? The tomb would have been like a family vault made to accommodate many people, many bodies. But because Jesus had been executed on criminal charges, he would have become the only occupant had he, of course, remained in the grave. What a sacrifice. How generous was this man? The fact that Matthew emphasizes the closing of the tomb witnessed by so many of Jesus' followers tells us that there was no mistake about the place of his burial and that he was treated by respect and with dignity by Joseph. On the other hand, those who had pursued Jesus to the cross were not satisfied with respect and with dignity. Keeping in mind that the next day after his execution was a Sabbath, and a super Sabbath at that, it's the Sabbath of the Passover weekend. It's extraordinary that the chief priests and the Pharisees would break the Sabbath to approach Pilate with a plan to thwart what they thought might happen. It's extraordinary to think that they would go to these sorts of lengths to discredit Jesus, to discredit his followers, to prevent what they thought might possibly happen. They thought that Jesus' disciples might try to retrieve his body and so claim he'd risen from the dead. And having so often accused Jesus and his followers with breaking the Sabbath laws themselves, with their acts of healing, of compassion, these men, in their desperate attempt to eliminate all traces of Jesus, are now prepared to do the very thing they so condemned Jesus for doing during his mission and ministry on earth. The responsibility for disposing of executed prisoners was usually left to the Roman authorities. But due to the actions of Joseph, Pilate was happy to pass this on to the Jewish religious leaders. "You have a guard. Go make it as secure as you can." Of course, we can read too much into things sometimes, things that are not really there. But I wonder if we can detect in Pilate's words and the manner that they were delivered something more like, "Good luck with that. Good luck with that." I wonder if Pilate suspected that this was not the end of the curious incident of this strange young man. And so they did as the governor suggested. They sealed the tomb. They posted a guard. But neither the Jewish authorities or even the might of the Roman Empire would imprison Jesus or prevent him from completing his mission to conquer death and so secure the freedom from the bondage of sin for his fallen creation, which he won for them on the very cross others hoped would silence him forever. The next chapter of Matthew's Gospel is not a secret, it's not a surprise to to us or to anyone else. Jesus will indeed break the seal of the tomb. He will bamboozle the guards. He will briefly even confuse his own followers as the struggle to reconcile what happens on that great day matches their human minds, and they just cannot comprehend what's going on. But we are not confused. We know the truth, and we live in the hope that his resurrection has made possible for all who follow him. Now, after the Sabbath, toward the dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, and the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothing white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He's not here, for he has risen, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead. And behold, he's going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. See, I have told you." So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to tell the disciples. And behold, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." We've heard three stories told this morning. Peter, the guy who walked with Jesus those 3 years, who was so intimate with Jesus, so humiliated at his denial. The story of the centurion, a man who didn't know Jesus, didn't know who he was. Maybe he'd heard rumors, maybe he'd thought about him, probably not. And yet so influenced by what he saw that day at the cross. Joseph of Arimathea, almost like a secret follower. Yet he did speak up. It says in the scriptures, he did. But this man who was so generous to Jesus. All of them will hear the story of the resurrection. Peter will obviously be involved. But Joseph, the centurion, what impact will that have on them? We never hear any of their stories after this day. We hear a little more about Peter. But here we are today, on Good Friday of 2021, about to share this meal, which is our remembrance of what this day is about. Where's your story in today? Where is your story in what we are hearing today from these witnesses of what happened all those years ago? We want to remember Jesus. We want to do that through this meal. What I want you to do, first of all, is just take a few moments to think of your own story. How have you got here today? Are you like me, the beneficiary of a godly parent who told you about Jesus from when you were just so small and helped you to see the truth of God's word through encouraging me to continue with Sunday school and Boys Brigade and church and youth groups? Is that your story? Is your story about a friend who told you about Jesus, a family member, somebody at your work? What's your story that has brought you here today, where in a few minutes you will take a small cup, eat a small piece of bread, drink a small amount of juice, and you'll remember Jesus and be thankful? Just take a few moments, just bow your head perhaps, close your eyes, and think about that as we pass around the cups, and then we'll all eat and drink together this morning.